This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Good evening from Tampa at Raymond James Stadium. It's Three Deep for the Illini Inquirer podcast today, as we have Ryan Easterling joining us with Joey Wagner and Jeremy Warner as well, talking about another heartbreaking, close, last-minute loss for Illinois football, which ends the season losing 4 out of 5, ending the season 8-1. But they had a 7-point lead going into the fourth quarter against Mississippi State, a team obviously playing with a lot of emotion, and a team that was pretty full strength, given that they didn't have any opt-outs, had a couple guys missing from the transfer portal. But another close loss, Joey. This is the third loss Illinois has lost the lead or a tie in the final 30 seconds. Just a painful way, but kind of a fitting way for Illinois football to end this season.
Yeah, Ryan and I were down on the field, and Ryan nailed it. He looked over and goes, kind of Indiana, huh? And you could feel it brewing. The offense really stalled out there in the second half. I know we're going to get into what that looked like. And the defense kind of got dinked and dunked again on that last drive. Like Mississippi State, you called it, Jeremy. They were consistent in just that middle of the field. I can't wait for the PFF stats to see how many of those passes were completed within 10 yards in the middle of the field. It felt like they just made a lot of plays in that area. And then they did it again on the final drive. That's kind of the next step. Not kind of it. I think that is the next step for Illinois is to figure out ways to get over the hump and close those out. Because it's kind of how this thing started. Week one, technically it's Illinois' second game, but week one of the season at Indiana, and you close out here. But yeah, you saw it coming. You saw it coming there early in the fourth quarter.
Ryan, what would you say is the biggest reason Illinois lost this game?
To me, I think part of it was the run game. They really struggled to move the ball on the ground, and that's been the staple of the offense all year. And, you know, they missed the hell out of Chase Brown today. I'm not saying that having him would have changed the outcome, but I think it definitely gave them a lot better chance to win. They even taking away DeVito's sack yards, they almost got doubled up by Mississippi State rushing. So that's not typical of a Brett Bielema coach team. So I felt like there were times when they started getting the run game moving a little bit and the offensive line got into a rhythm and they had some churn, but otherwise it felt pretty disjointed in the run game today.
Ryan, I also thought the passing game, well, it had its moments. Isaiah Williams had a career high 114 yards. And if he didn't lateral on that last play that went for a touchdown for Mississippi State, he would have had over 160, I believe. So getting him more involved, I think, was a sign of what Barry Lunney is going to do here in the future. But I didn't think Tommy DeVito was particularly strong in his final game. There were a couple passes I thought he just missed. And then this could go with the offensive coordinator as well, but a lot of verticals today. And that led to Tommy holding the ball a little bit longer. Maybe he needed some more routes to come in, but he got pressure in his face all day. 7 sacks Illinois allowed today. It seemed like that was a mix of the offensive line, quarterback, and maybe play calling. But what did you see there? Because Tommy had a couple plays where it felt like, man, missed a guy and was just a little bit off.
Yeah, there were a number of times where I felt like he probably held on to the ball a little bit too long. Some of that probably just waiting for routes to develop. Some of that was cases where the receivers didn't get the separation they needed. I mean, there were a few times where he threw the ball and the receivers were pretty well covered and he really had no choice. It was either that or take the sack. But I thought there were several times in that game where he held on to the ball and let the pressure get to him, because the offensive line, for the most part, really, they held up fairly well for, you know, for a few seconds, but they weren't able to give him the same kind of protection in passing today that Will Rogers got from Mississippi State. I thought if you look at the other side of the ball, Mississippi State was actually pretty good in pass protection. And I think that was one of those things with the internal clock at DeVito. Maybe he was just kind of, you know, had some nerves, some jitters, but you know, I thought he maybe held on to it too long, maybe tried to make too many of those big plays rather than taking what the defense and his offensive line was giving him.
Joey, Barry Loney's offense certainly better this year than what Illinois' offense was a year ago, but the lack of consistency was certainly frustrating. They weren't able to run the ball today. Part of that, obviously, was Chase Brown not being here, but I asked Brett Bielema, what's the next step, year two for Barry Loney and his offense, and I thought his answer was interesting. One was consistency, but two was identity. And I think that's a fair question. Even though Barry, I think this offense is better, but what is the identity? What does he lean on? I think he's got to still figure that out, even though he certainly was better than his predecessor. There were certainly games this season where Illinois' offense kept Illinois from winning, and I think that includes today because the defense, I thought, giving up only 13 points really in this game was pretty big for them.
Yeah, the identity thing's huge, because, and I know Brett Bielema has pushed back on this basically since he got hired. When I think of Illinois, Brett Bielema coach teams, identity is running the ball, but I think we talked about this on one of the many hours down here, but what is that without Chase Brown? I mean, is it still run to the amount of times they ran this year? I mean, is that dependent on if they go searching for a portal? I thought it was interesting Brett Bielema didn't exactly push that idea all the way down the drain. But identity is – I think we thought quick passes, right? When Barry Loney was hired, it's like, okay, they're going to be a strong running team. They're going to get their playmakers in space. You did see that to a degree. But I think, yeah, I mean, what is it? What's the plan? How do you do that? And I think even if those are your focal points of identity, and I know Ryan mentioned it earlier, did you've got to still be able to stretch the field, and you've got to build your receiver room up to complement what your identity is. And if your identity is running in short passes in space, you got to make sure you've got an answer to get it downfield. And the consistency, that's exactly right. I mean, Illinois, I'm trying to think back to the games, right, that they lost. Indiana, red zone, close five. Purdue, it probably depends on how you want to hear this. Purdue could either be the call on Devin Witherspoon. But, I mean, there's just been those moments where, especially late in the game, like those last two, three drives of a game that you just want to see Illinois be able to punch it and capitalize and end it in the end zone.
Yeah, four-minute drill, right? Indiana in this game, I think, come down to four-minute drill, being able to waste away the clock but also complete the play. So, Ryan, where do you think Barry Loney needs to grow in year two and maybe – addresses needs to personnel-wise, because outside of Isaiah Williams, this wide receiver room certainly struggled to get separation. And then the question is of future at Illinois running back. What is this offense after Chase Brown leaps to the NFL here?
Well, to your comment earlier about the transfer portal, Joey, and the running back room, you know, it sounded like he almost alluded that in a more general sense, that they would look position for position in replacing guys if they needed to. And they've got other positions where they're losing guys, but I immediately thought running back. And I don't know if there's a guy out there right now. Maybe they've got a beat on him. Obviously they'll get a chance here in the next few days to host some guys. But I mean, if they can, they may need to replace, you can't really replace Chase Brown, but they may need to get a guy that can at least replace some of Chase Brown's production and skill. But the other thing too, for me, was the receivers. You mentioned it, Jeremy, is, you know, Isaiah Williams was one of the only guys out there today that was really consistently getting separation. And even he at times wasn't getting as open as, you know, he would probably like to. And part of it's overhauling the receiver group. And I know they brought in a good group last year. There were a couple guys that got dinged up this year. Sean Miller's a guy I think is going to be pretty good. And then they've got a couple guys in this class that got some good ability. Kenari Wilcher was here today. He's got good speed to stretch the field. And then the big fish that they're waiting on right now is Malik Elzey, and his decision goes public here on the 7th. So there's a big chance to give this room a boost, but I think part of it is just part of its personnel, and part of it's going to be adjusting to what they have on the roster.
I want to build two things off of that if I could real quick. Brian Hightower didn't play. Brett Bielema said he had a hamstring injury back in Champaign. I know there were some questions about, you know, we didn't see a lot of Pat Bryant down the stretch. When we were down in that last 5 or 6 minutes, he was getting some ice on his shoulder. So I don't know if he was dinged up. But to the point, I think there are pieces there in the wide receiver room, and we've talked at length about the way that they're building that. But you definitely miss those two guys today as two of the guys who have been your more productive wide receiver. The one reported on the running back. We talk about it because there's, I don't know that there's a better pitch that you have on this football team to a transfer than running back, right? Come in here, look what Chase Brown did, look what our offensive line is going to be. And I mean, that's going to be attractive when you're talking in the portal. So I think that's why we keep coming back to this. It's not a knock on McCray or Reggie Love, but when your pitch is this good and your window is your window and you know, maybe it's open, it feels like it's opening, you've got to hit on those pitches that are really, really hot in the transfer portal.
Yeah, and let's be honest. We came into this game saying, well, let's see what they have at running back after Chase Brown. And it wasn't great. I thought Reggie Love had some nice plays today. I think he can be part of your running back rotation. Josh McCray never got going. So there's just still questions at that position beyond. Now, maybe that changes with spring ball. Maybe that changes as they get more of the workload next year. But, you know, we don't know what Aiden Loffrey is going to be. We don't know what Jordan Anderson and Caden Fagan are going to be early in their careers. And it's one position, as you said, Joey, where you could probably get a stud if a stud goes, because it's your best position of production the last few years alongside defensive back. So, yeah, I think they got a great sell, and it'll be very interesting to see what they do there. As for wide receiver, Colin Dixon's coming in. If you get Malik Elzey, do you add another one? I think you need somebody with speed, but they've added some talent to that room. I do want to get to this. I thought today was really impressive for Aaron Henry. This defense, I didn't think had a great matchup against Mississippi State, but I thought Aaron Henry did some really interesting things. Going with a 5-1-5 defense, a wrinkle that somebody could correct me, like you guys, if you've seen it, I don't think we've seen that wrinkle all that much this year. And we've seen a defense with a lot of wrinkles with it, with Ryan Walter. So I thought that was interesting. They kept things in front of them. I thought the young defensive backs really did well. I thought of all the defensive backs, I thought Quan Martin struggled probably the most today, which I think is a great sign for Illinois. Tyler Strain made a phenomenal play. Matthew Bailey, of course, with interception with the help of Johnny Newton. But I thought Aaron Henry got his defense to play a winning game, Ryan. So I was impressed. First impressions against prolific passing attack, one that likes to dink and dunk you. I thought they played pretty well, even though towards the end, Mississippi State was able to convert.
Yeah, I think the biggest sign of Aaron Henry doing well was that you didn't really notice a huge drop off between a Walters coach defense and an Aaron Henry coach defense. Now, I'm sure they weren't really going to reinvent the wheel between Walters departing and Henry coming on board, but you know, they had a good game plan for this. You mentioned Mississippi State's going to spread them out. So what did they do? They built a scheme that would combat that. And I thought for the most part, other than maybe a couple of blown plays, they did pretty good in limiting him, especially in the first half. Will Rogers really struggled in the first half, you know, didn't have his normal productivity. I thought he was better in the second. He started hitting some of those shorter throws, like Joey mentioned, where they were dinking and dunking. But Illinois, for the most part, took away those long pass plays that Mississippi State has had some success on this year. And, you know, to the young DB's credit, you look at how Xavier Scott was about four games ago when he first got thrown into the fire, and he played a really good game today. So these are the kind of building blocks, and there will be some growing pains, but these are the kind of building blocks that help, and you start to see the fruits of that next year, especially with this young core that's coming in. They're going to have some other talented defensive backs coming in with them this year, but I thought this group really, over the course of the last four or five games, had some big growth.
I thought Xavier Scott was physical as hell today.
Yeah. He laid a Witherspoon
hit. Some hits, man, and like that's a good sign. Ryan, you nailed it, dude. Like, when Taz Nicholson got hurt and they were out without Trell Jennings, it was like, oh my goodness, is Quan Martin going to go to cornerback? Is slide outside a little bit more? And I still think Xavier Scott ultimately ends up being Quan Martin in that role. But those young guys grew up quite a bit. It wasn't perfect. I mean, you're playing a team that's going to throw the heck out of it or frequently throw it. It wasn't perfect, but that's a really good sign. When you're talking about just the amount of turnover that defensive backfield is going to have, it is an absurd amount of turnover back there. You're getting Taz Nicholson back. That's it, right? I mean, the guys who started week zero, week one, week two, week three, you're getting Taz Nicholson back. Like that, it's a ton of turnover. And to get back, Jeremy, to Aaron Henry, I asked some of the guys, I said, was there any one thing, two things he did today that you're like, oh, okay, this is what our new defensive coordinator does or doesn't do. And it helps, of course, that he's been around all season. And everyone basically is like, nah, it's who he is. I mean, he's the same guy he was. And I like that if you're trying to figure out what this is going to look like with him, that he didn't come in his first game as defensive coordinator and try to be somebody else in the locker room. I think that was a trend. Brett Bielema alluded to that as well, if I'm not mistaken. So, like, that's a big moment, right? Like, you're in a bowl game. You really want to go 9-4 and close out with a win in Tampa. And he didn't try to be somebody he's not, from what we've heard. I mean, I don't think four people would sit there and tell us otherwise. So I think it's a good start to the Aaron Henry era. And I'm sure he would tell you, maybe, but sure as heck would have liked to left Raymond James with a win. But yeah, I'm really interested in how the rest of that, the outside linebackers position gets filled and just kind of what that plays out. But I think the voice that they have there, the consistency they have there is important to build on when you're talking turnover like Illinois had.
Yeah, and he went three-man rush a lot today because Mississippi State, like Purdue, just gets the ball out quickly. But I do think the defensive line still made a great impact in this game because they had four pass breakups at the line of scrimmage, two by Johnny Newton, one by Calvin Avery, one by Keith Randolph as well. And they were able to tackle pretty well. But the couple moments, a couple on the sideline, one on that big run on third and eight, Ryan, that's really, Ryan, where the defense kind of let up a little bit. But still, I thought it was a winning game plan by Aaron Henry.
Yeah, I thought he had a good game plan. You know, they really limited what some of Mississippi State's bigger receivers were doing, because if you look at the roster, the guys they have are pretty tall guys. And for these defensive backs, I know they like to recruit the bigger defensive backs, but they got tested. Like, Tyler Strain isn't a tall guy. He's not a super long guy. Xavier Scott's not a tall or long guy, and they more than held their own against some bigger guys. So I thought that was pretty encouraging in what they're able to do there. You know, and they didn't get home on the blitz that much or on the pass rush, but they did get their hands up, but it made it a little bit more difficult to the line of scrimmage. I think that was one of the things that Mississippi State in the second half started to scheme around, and that's why they started going to the outside, where maybe guys like Newton and Randolph couldn't get a hand on the ball as much, and they started pushing the perimeter against some of those defensive backs and taking the 4 or 5 yards that the defense was giving them.
And Joey, you mentioned the defensive backs, all the turnover that's going there. Isn't it weird that, like, I don't have a lot of questions about the secondary? Like, it's not going to be as good probably as this year, but there's a lot of talent. There's a lot of feisty guys there. Like, I think that room, the way they're recruiting, the way they're developing, the glimpses of guys we've seen, whether it's Matthew Bailey with three interceptions and like 150 snaps this year, or Xavier Scott and Tyler Strain showing something. Taz Nicholson took a huge step forward. And, of course, all the talent coming in with Caleb Patterson, a JUCO kid, Sabor Kareem, a four-star kid. I think that room with Aaron Henry and now Antonio Finellas is in really good shape for the future, despite some of the best players we've seen in the secondary at Illinois leaving here.
Yeah, and that was kind of a cliff position when they got hired, right? We're like, oh, man, what happens when Tony Adams leave? We didn't know anything about Kirby Joseph, let's be honest. We didn't think – he wasn't the what happens when he leaves guy when this staff took over, but you had to replace him. And it's just like there was kind of like the offensive line was not as probably drastic, but there was kind of a gap in age there. And what was this going to look like? And I think it's interesting. I don't think Brett's like overdoing it when he says this. When you ask about Aaron Henry, he always brings up, of course, it's the intangibles. We've gone over those, right? But he brings up, look what he did with Devin Witherspoon. He did that again today. And Taz Nicholson, look what he did with Taz Nicholson. And those are still, corners where I still have a lot of questions, or the most questions of any position back there going into next season. But, yeah, they've shown they can recruit. They've shown they can develop. We still need to see what Antonio Finellas is as a defensive backs coach and what that looks like on the trail, on the development front. But, yeah, I think for a position that in January or February of 2020, if you would have said, what's this look like going into 23, I don't know. I don't want to rewrite history or how we would have said it, but I don't know what we would have thought back then going into this. But I think that's a position group that you do have some confidence in. And look, it's probably not going to be fun to hear, but you found out a lot about those guys because you went 1-4 down the stretch and your starters got hurt, right? Because I don't know. What would we be saying about Xavier Scott going into next season or Tyler Strain? We didn't really see heads or tails of him until these injuries came about. So I'm not trying to silver lining the losing those games. But I think you do have to address that without, if those injuries don't happen, you probably have a better record, but you don't know what it looks like going into next season.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Yeah, my quick hits. I wrote like 2019, this season ended with a bit of a thud. You lost 4 of 5. You had a chance to make the Big Ten championship game, and you didn't. You had a chance to win the Big Ten West. You didn't. You had a chance to potentially guys go to a Rose Bowl, and you didn't. So in the same breath, it's great to be disappointed with an 8-5 season in a bowl game in Tampa that you had a chance to close out and you weren't able to close out. So all of that, there's nuance to that. So I'm going to throw the question at you. How would you grade the 2022 Illini football season? Brian, I'll start with you.
So I think with where they're ultimately trying to get to, I think you could give it a solid B. I mean, they definitely made some progress. There were some shortcomings for sure. There's a lot of room to grow, but when you look at what the last 15 to 20 years of Illinois football has been and you know, looking at blowout losses, multiple losses, bowl games being a rarity, for them to have a season like this and feel like – I think this season more than anything feels different than some of those other 7, 8, 9 win seasons, and there haven't been many, this feels more sustainable. And I think you would say that maybe it felt that way after the Rose Bowl with what they had coming back, but that season – I don't know what happened that next year. It just that Western Michigan game and all that, but this just feels like what they've built is more sustainable. It's not one of those where they're just signing a bunch of 1 year free agents and hoping to make that last run for LeBron. It's they had an 8-win season because they've done things the right way. They've been competitive in all these games. And you know, once they start to learn how to win, which is something that Illinois football just has struggled with, I think when they learn how to win and play, make those plays in those critical situations, I think you're going to see this team take that next step forward. And that's probably the biggest thing for me is if they can do that, I think that's how they go from that B to that B plus, make it to Indy. Maybe that's the next step. And then eventually, you know, Brett's going to want to be able to compete for a championship in Indy. So I feel like with what they've built, they've got, you know, I'd put them in a solid B, and I think that they've set themselves up well to continue to raise that grade in the next few years.
Joey, what would you say?
Yeah, B comes to mind. I'll go B minus because I think it would have been a B in August, but I think that October kind of changed. And we're quibbling here, right? Like B minus, B, it doesn't matter. It's 4 or 5 down the stretch. I mean, it's tough. That's tough to take.
So you mean you'd have a B plus in October, but after November?
No, I mean, like, if you were to ask me in August, said they're going to be 8-5, they're going to play in Tampa, I said, all right, yeah, that's a B+ and A-. But we talked all year about having to reevaluate expectations and where this program is. And I still think, like, if it's a B minus, it's like a B minus plus. Like, it's right there on the fence between B and B minus and B.
What kind of grading scale are you using?
Not a good one. No, I would have done betters for numbers. We lost everybody on this garbage. I just think, like, the 4 of the 5 down the stretch is, it's tough because of those one score games that you just, and come on, for all intents and purposes, this was a one score game, right? I mean, this game, it was a 3-point loss. I mean, it ended up being a 9, but I just think that you get one of those, right? And hey, you're an Indy. I suppose that's the easy one. Even if you get this one, but just kind of a sour taste. It's still a good season. I think there's still, to Ryan's point and the point you made earlier, Jeremy, there's so much meat on the bone. It feels like there's a sustainability element to this. And you see the young players in the system that you think are going to be there. I think the coordinators, there's obviously stuff you want to see more from Barry Lunny Jr. You want to see a full season from Aaron Henry, but you feel like you got Illinois has coordinators that are that have a plan, that have a purpose, that just kind of have it. Yeah. Long term, I think it's there, and this was a step forward, 100%. Like, you can't look at this season and say anything else. Down the stretch, though, I mean, that's tough, dude. It's a tough way to go from 7-1 to 8-5.
All right, so I'm going to put the brightest grade here. I'm going B plus because Illinois won 8 games. That for maybe I'm grading on a curve here. You know, Ryan took engineering classes and probably got a 38% and got an A on something back in the day. I heard about
that. I'd be lying if I said that didn't happen once or twice.
So we're making smart Ryan so bad with our stupidity over here, by the way.
So I'm grading on a little bit of a curve, but I think you have to when you're talking about Illinois football. Illinois football just won 8 games. They beat Iowa. They beat Minnesota. They beat Wisconsin. They won. They beat at Nebraska, right? And they lost 5 games practically by one score. If you consider this one, you know, that I hate that stat is now thrown out the window because of that punt return to or fumble return touchdown at the end, but all those games by single digits. They had a chance to win all those games in the fourth quarter. And some of them, you know, obviously the play call or the refereeing didn't go their way in some of them, though. Hey, shout out the refs today. The ACC crew, I thought, did a really, really good job today. So you got to praise them when they do well. But I think Illinois football showed that they can be competitive in every game, even when they go up to Michigan. Like, that is a huge step forward. As Ryan said, like, somebody told us from Illinois after the game, Joey, like, we no longer go to a game and go, oh, crap, this is going to be bad. Like, this is going to be an awful experience. You have a chance to win every game now. And they got huge questions they got to answer in the offseason to sustain that. But I thought they set such a big step forward. Last year, there was competitiveness. This year, there's competitiveness and wins. And now they got to learn how to be better offensively, take a next step in year two under Barry Lunny. They got to get better talent, right? But you had how many All-Americans, how many All-Big Ten players, national award winners. Brett Bielema was in the discussion for Big Ten Coach of the Year and National Coach of the Year at some points. You're in the Big Ten West race for as long as that's going to be there. I feel like Illinois can be a factor. And I agree with Ryan. I think it's built on sustained ways of winning. Now you just got to find a way to win closer games. But listen, this is probably what the Brett Bielema era is going to be. A lot of close games because that's what the Big Ten West is, and it's usually what the Big Ten is. And it depends on who makes the bigger plays, who makes the key penalties, like all those things. And Illinois in a few of those games just came up on the wrong end of it. But I think this is a really good staff. And the Big Ten continues to elevate its coaching staffs, as Joey and I have talked about frequently with Nebraska. And we'll see where they go from here. I had to give a shot. I'm going B plus.
Can we – okay. Since I – to save the stupidity of earlier. No, okay. Can we put like a percentages – like if you're talking like on a 0 to 100 scale, yeah. A B would be an 85, Ryan. Is that about where you land?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm used to just doing like a letter or a letter with the plus, but –
Expanding horizons today. See,
I'm like 88.5, Joey.
Okay. I'll take like an 82.5.
Okay.
I think we're all in the same window.
I'm somewhere in the middle. I'm at about an 84, 85. So same range. But I do want to point one thing out. And you know, at the beginning of the year, when we're talking about recent expectations, obviously they skated down the stretch. But Vegas projected the over-under line at 4.5 wins for this team.
That's right, yeah.
And for Illinois to come in with 8 wins, they had that blown out by 2.5 wins at the 7-1 mark, 8 games into the season. So
They went over Vegas, mid-October.
Vegas is pretty good at setting these things. So I think that's important. Obviously, I mean, I don't think you could say this team overachieved, because you look at what happened down the stretch, and obviously they had more opportunities they missed. But when you look at what the Vegas expectation was and like the betting market versus what they actually achieved, I'd say they overachieved, but there were still definitely some opportunities missed.
So what's the over-under going into next season from Vegas?
I'm going to guess six and a half.
I think it could be 5.5, to be honest with you. I still think people are going to question Illinois with losing Chase Brown, losing all these guys in the secondary and a new quarterback. But that is a fantastic question, Joey. Mm. Like, I think it's going to be in that 5.5 to 6 range. I don't think it's going to be, you know, like if you got Chase Brown back and you got Tommy DeVito back, I think that would have been a different discussion. And maybe some of it depends on the draft decisions here coming up. But I still think there's going to be doubt about Illinois.
What returns would shift this from, let's say it's 5.5, would shift this to 5.5? I mean, obviously, if you get Keith Randolph and Johnny Newton come back, but is that enough to go 5.5 to 6.5? I mean, I don't know. I think those of us who watch it understand their value. Yeah. I think if you're just a passerby in Vegas, you might. I think 5.5 feels right, unless they go in the portal and they add, you know, if there's a running back out there that has got all this production, or if you go in and get a wide receiver. I don't know. I think 5.5, 6.5. That's a different window, right, than we're used to seeing for 3.5 Illinois football.
Yeah, I mean, I think the expectation's bowl, right? I mean, yeah, you got to get back to a bowl. So, I know internally in the program the expectations are going to be set higher than whatever Vegas throws at them. But yep. I think if you're looking at this team should make a bowl. They don't play Ohio State or Michigan next year.
Good call.
They've got a pretty favorable schedule. There's a couple tough games on the schedule. I watched Kansas play Arkansas, and Kansas is a different team now than old Kansas under like Les Miles and Turner Gill. Like, they're actually a team now.
I brought up with somebody the other day, of course you get Kansas on the upswing because that's how Illinois scheduled the non-conference, but they made the right point. Hey, Kansas is getting us on the upswing as well. So that is certainly true, but they do have a favorable schedule. I mean, Toledo's not an easy MAC opponent, but come on, you got to take care of that at home, at Kansas, home against Penn State, home against Fort Atlantic. Purdue is going to have huge question marks. I think Purdue's over-under should be smaller than Illinois, despite landing Hudson Card, because they lose so much, new coaching staff. Nebraska, I still think, is a rebuild. At Maryland, that's a winnable game. Home against Wisconsin, at Minnesota, home against Indiana, at Iowa, home against Northwestern. So maybe you're right, Ryan. Maybe 6.5 is the right number there.
I just think the schedule lays out well for them to have a season where they don't just eke to a bowl game. I think they've got a chance. And you look at it too, like, there could be a handful of games where they may have a letdown here and there, and there's probably going to be some growing pains with getting Luke Altmyer up to speed. But I just see the opportunity there to see some of those games that maybe this year didn't go their way, some of those plays that didn't go their way, or, you know, they just came up short on, and turn those into wins. Because you're looking to take some of those 5 losses that they've got and turn a couple of those into wins for next year. And so if they can do that, execute those plays, build that consistency that was the theme of all the post-game interviews, I think that's where they get to that 7, potentially back to 8 win mark again.
Yeah, Joey, I think, like, we knew that 4.5 number was pretty low for this team, and I would have taken the over if I were a degenerate. But at 5.5, I'm like, over. I think Illinois would go over that. 6.5, I'm thinking about it. So, in my opinion, 6.5 would be the number, but yeah. I don't know what the outward thinking will be.
Yeah, that's a good point. See, when I think 5.5, I think, like, how can I make money here? And, like, that's the over. 6.5, you're right, man. That's, you got to think about it. Also, does this set up for, like, Illinois, Kansas, College Game Day, most random College Game Day football game going on?
Probably not that early in the season. I think both of those programs got to be like 5-0 to even get consideration for that.
Tennessee or Bama is going to be playing some bye game that week they'll go to.
Yeah, that's a good call.
Guys, huge offseason. We've already gotten the big news of Luke Altmyer, and that's certainly, for me, one of the biggest storylines this offseason. Is how does Illinois' offense go with Luke Altmyer? And I asked Isaiah Williams, told him, I know you can't talk about the new quarterback, but how do you help a new quarterback get ready? He said, he's got to hang out with each other. We got to learn each other. And then we got to get into the practice facility, the indoor, and just really play catch a lot. So I expect some growing pains there. But outside of Luke Altmyer, who we've talked about, I think he's really talented, but will experience those growing pains because he hasn't played a lot of high college football here, Joey. Outside of Altmaier, what are some of your biggest offseason storylines here?
The draft decisions. I mean, that's my number one. Do you get Johnny Newton? Do you get Keith Randolph? Do you get Julian Pearl? Those are the big three, I think, that we've circled as what are they going to do? Tariq Barnes would be in that discussion. I think we think that Illinois is pretty solid on the rest of the offensive line. So those are that's the biggest one. And you'll know that. I mean, that, by the way, you got 2 weeks. 2 weeks from tomorrow is the declaration day. That's why I think that, and do they – greedy is not the word in the portal, but do they shop around for a running back in the transfer portal? Because I think you can make an argument for it. Certainly there are several arguments against it, but it's the draft decisions, and then what are these two open positions on the coaching staff? What does Brett Bielema do? I think Jeremy Ryan, it was super telling that every time Brett Bielema's talked about his outside linebacker coach and what he's looking for, More pass rush value. It's very clear in my reading of it that he does not like. He doesn't feel like he got what he wanted pass rush wise out of a group that is talented. I mean, it's a really talented group. You could add Seth Coleman in that declaration discussion if he were to go that route, though I don't think he's on the same conversation as the two defensive linemen and Pearl. But yeah, how does that fill out, and how many, if any, if all of those guys do you get back?
Yeah, I think the other thing you throw in there is, do you get any surprises in the portal on the way out, right? That's sure. You want to avoid those, and Brett Bielema has done a pretty good job, right? The big surprises last year were Deuce Spann and Daniel Barker, and I think that certainly made an impact. So I think Deuce Spann would have been a great tool for this offense, and Daniel Barker could have helped, even though he's not a great blocker and didn't have a big year at Michigan State, but having that kind of weapon certainly would help. But yeah, the draft decisions, Bielema hinted that they're going to have guys return. And have announcements here coming up. We'll see if that happens, how quickly it does, but it will happen in the coming days. Malik Elzey obviously coming up here. But Ryan, I want to get your opinion. We haven't talked on this podcast yet about Antonio Fanellis as a hire, former Wisconsin kid, the third Wisconsin player that'll be on this defensive staff. And then what do you think about filling the other positions outside linebacker and running back?
Well, I think as far as Fanellis goes, Bielema is probably starting to go in a different direction with his hires than he maybe has in the past. If you look at what he built at Arkansas, he had a lot more turnover. So there were a lot more guys in and out. He was going off of connections, like external connections. These are guys that he got to coach for 4 or 5 years, got to see how they were in the locker room, got to see how they were around their teammates. Obviously, they've been around some good coaches themselves. Aaron Henry had a few stops at some good places, like NC State with Dave Doran, who was Bielema's former defensive coordinator. He had Fanellis, who was at LSU most recently, with Kerry Cooks, who was a former defensive backs coach for him. So he knows what these guys bring to the table, not only because of the connections he has with former colleagues, but also because he got to see them as players and how they were as locker room. And I think Bielema seems like the kind of guy who's very intentional about those types of traits for how they carry themselves in the locker room and how they carry themselves on the field, because those guys were also leaders on the field. Mm-hmm. Joey, you had posted the picture of those guys on the podium at the Rose Bowl, and not a whole lot of guys get put up there. So obviously they were big parts of some of those Wisconsin teams that won championships. So I think part of that is the championship mentality that those guys bring, but also just the fact that he can grow those guys, see the potential in them, and see them, you know, growing into coaches while also mentoring them and not just going out and shopping coaches on the open market, but actually developing them from in-house. And it's kind of a different strategy and a different method than he's used in the past.
Yeah, Joey, I think you're right about upgrading, right? I think Illinois should get greedy. I think if you have a running back out there that is really talented and you think can be your best option, go recruit him. Listen, you're going to lose some guys in the transfer portal, but your job is to win games. And right now, I still got questions at running back. If you can find a wide receiver that can complement Isaiah Williams and push Pat Bryant and whoever else you're adding here, Casey Washington, Brian Hightower, and next year, like, hey, that's what good programs do. So I'm really interested to see that. And, of course, if they do lose a Johnny Newton or a Keith Randolph or a Julian Pearl, I think you'll see them go back in the portal. I know they offered Marcellus Johnson at Eastern Michigan, a former Normal kid, but I would get greedy about the offensive line because Jordan Slaughter struggled today, and I don't know if I'm counting on him to be a starter, but you got to continue to elevate the competition and elevate the talent in all those rooms.
Yeah, we say get greedy. I mean, but I think Brett Bielema has shown us over the course of the last 24 months that he's going to make a move that's going to get wins, right? I mean, I don't think it was particularly easy to fire Tony Peterson, but he did that quickly. I mean, he's here to get this done and to win games. If that means get greedy, if that means, I don't know, some pressure in the rooms to step up because you've got talent coming in, that's what it is. And that's how you build programs. That's not trying to portray Brett Bielema as this, you know, anomaly in the coaching world. Every coach does that. You've got to do that. So I think that's fascinating to me, man. Is running back it's not the biggest need, but it's in the portal, at least as of right now. But it's so interesting to me, like what that can be. And if they decide to do it, it's the most interesting part in the portal right now, in my opinion.
No, absolutely. So you got a Malik Elzey announcement coming up on January 7th. That certainly will get a lot of good vibes. And then running backs and outside linebackers. Joey, I get the feeling outside linebackers, as you said, the pass rush thing has been a really interesting comment because I think Brett knows he's got a few pros in that room, including Seth Coleman, who I thought could have been more consistent and an even more dominant pass rusher, and Gay Backus, who we both think can be a high draft pick at some point, and then more talent behind him, Trey Smith, Jared Beatty, Alec Bryant. But running backs will be interesting. I'm interested to see where the recruiting ties are there. Antonio Fanellis answers a lot of those with Florida. Outside linebackers coach, we'll find out. But running backs coach, I would imagine, would be someone with ties in the Midwest, I would imagine. St. Louis, Chicago area, wherever. I just think it'd be important to add another recruiter when you've already lost Corey Patterson, who's Illinois, St. Louis, Kevin Kane, who recruited Illinois and Missouri, and then even Ryan Walters, who recruited Illinois.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Ryan. I was just going to say, I mean, I think those are positions, too, that are traditionally recruiters. You look at your defensive backs coaches and your running backs coaches, and Bielema has been pretty consistent in saying that he views his outside linebackers coach as probably more of a teacher, and I would think that saying that he's going to look more heavily at the NFL for that position is probably a good indicator that he values that more as a teaching position than an ace recruiter. But at places like a running back coach and a corners coach, those are guys that you really want to be – you know, dogs out on the recruiting trail that can get after it. And that's what I think you see that with Fanellis, who has most recently been spending time at LSU, which, you know, SEC recruiting is a different tier of crazy. And so he has that background. And then the way it sounded, and Joey, maybe correct me if I'm wrong, or Jeremy, correct me if I'm wrong here, but the way that Bielema talked, it sounded like he's got things pretty zoned in on an outside linebackers coach. At least the way he talked in that postgame press conference, he might have somebody already in mind or on the line.
If not, I mean, there might be a couple guys. I think he might be weighing through options. I don't think this is a fully casted net where he's going all over the place. I think this is probably a short list of 3 to 5 guys, probably maybe even smaller than that.
Yeah. So I think this is going to be an interesting offseason, certainly one where this program has a lot more to sell, but certainly strides to make. So I think overall, as I said, I think it's a huge step forward for this program, yet with some really regrettable losses, and today kind of epitomizes that. Joey, before we go, lasting impressions of Tampa. What'd you think, man?
I think that you hate the sun.
The sun hates me. I don't hate the sun.
No, I don't think the sun complains about you nearly as much as you complain about the sun. Tampa was fun. It was fun. I think maybe the most striking thing, I do want to bring up one more thing before we're done. Yeah. I think maybe the most telling thing is, and I'm not trying to carry water for a fan base here, but it was hard to not notice, dude. I mean, like the social event last night over near the team hotel was shoulder to shoulder. It was packed. It was, I mean, they turned out. And then you get here today, and there's a lot of Illinois fans. We saw pictures from the thing of Steinbrenner Field. I mean, it was packed for the pregame. You can see the thirst for Illinois football. And I know everyone thinks basketball this bad, and they should, right? Illinois basketball is Illinois basketball. But I've always thought it's not going to take a lot for people to jump on board, back on board, or both feet in for Illinois football. And I think that's being displayed. Like, this is it's Monday, as I understand it, in Tampa, away from Champaign. And they showed out in droves, man. Like, they're ready to jump back on the bandwagon. They really are, if they're not already there.
I got to say, I'm pretty surprised, like, that this was – I thought it was two-thirds Illini fans.
I was going to say, it was about 2-1.
I was shocked by that because Mississippi State's got a good program. It's not as far of a drive. It's still a far drive. And of course, the Mike Leach thing. But I also thought the travel issues that everyone's had the last week might hamper some of that. The cost might hamper some of that. But, dude, you are right, Joey. This fan base is ready for a winner, and I think they so appreciated having fun every Saturday, going in every Saturday thinking they have a chance to win. And they were pretty close to winning their program's first game ever against an SEC program. They don't play them very much, but they almost had their first win ever. And I got to say, the last 2 months, or I guess 2.5 months, I've now seen the Illini fan base shine more than any fan base at Las Vegas, and then outgrow or show up an SEC program in Florida. Ryan, that's really impressive.
Oh, yeah. And really, the only thing that made the volume levels between the fans even anywhere close was those damn cowbells. God dang. But no, Illinois fans showed up. I mean, I went through the concourse earlier to go meet up with a couple people, and it was loud. There were ILL chants going on in there. Fans were out in force for this game. And you mentioned Vegas. It was similar to that, where there's the questions like, all right, if they get this opportunity, are they going to travel? And the fan base showed up. Like you see a lot of these other bowl games where the fan base just doesn't really bring it. And Illinois fans brought it for this game. They really showed up in numbers. The energy was there. There were probably a lot of daddy sodas going down, but they were excited.
They won the tailgate today.
Yeah, the fifth quarter. But, yeah, they showed up. And I think that not only, you know, the progress that's made on the field, but I think that also goes to show and builds them some credibility just in the college football scene. They're like, hey, the fans are serious about this. Like, they're not getting blown out anymore. This team has been competitive. It's been a lot easier to watch. And so if they're able to continue to make these strides, this fan base is really going to wake up.
Over under attendance. If we're sticking to the over unders, Joey, over under attendance next year, average 46.5.
Shoot. What was it this year? Lower than that.
Yeah. It's like 37, 38, maybe.
Yeah.
I'll take the over. I think the season ticket base is going to take a pretty significant step forward, and that's everything. Your season ticket base goes up. Your average, it sounds duh, but like you're having to move less volume of tickets week in and week out. I think over.
Brian, what do you think?
I think they'll go over in a few games. There'll be a couple of games where they have some bad attendance, whether it's weather related or something else. But I think for the most part, they're going to hit right around that 45, 50K mark. And especially if they get off to a hot start, I think that is going to be the key.
Maybe I was wrong. It was 42-1. 42-1. Maybe I should have gone a little higher. Yeah, but I agree. I think they're going to go a little higher than that number this year. Joey, you had one more thing you want to
bring two
up?
Things. Our friend Peter wants to know how we're going to enjoy this 18-hour drive back. Peter, put your grandma back in the cage. You either stand with us or you don't, all right? She's in the cage until we get back, Peter. I mean, come on. It's with solidarity with us. Okay. Yeah. A question for each of you. I'm curious. Second week of spring ball. Like, let's look ahead. Let's zoom not far ahead, but a little bit ahead. One offensive, one defensive player that's getting that spring buzz. Go.
I think it's going to be one of those young wide receivers. I still think Pat Bryant's got so much more that he can give. And we got to remember, he's still young. He's going to be a junior right next year. Hank Beatty could be a guy, man. Like, can you run more, you know, spread out, ace backfields? Like, do you still run as much 12 personnel? I think you're going to run a lot of 12 personnel, but you get more shifty guys in there and spread it out a little more when you can't run the ball quite as well with Chase Brown. So maybe Hank Beatty is my guy, Ryan.
So I'm going to start off on the defensive side. And this is a guy that I think could – obviously there's a couple of returners that have started some football on this side, but I think Caleb Patterson could be that guy. He's just a freak athlete. He's a big guy. He runs like a four, like a legit 4.4. And he's coming in early. He was a full qualifier out of high school, only did 1 year in JUCO. I think he's a guy that once he shows up has a chance to compete for a starting spot at corner. And just because of the athletic tools he has and the mindset he comes in with, I think he could be a guy that really challenges for a spot and gets some buzz in the spring.
You want to go offense first? Before I go, trying to round robin this? I'll stick on defense. I want to say Xavier Scott, just because – That position's there. Like, to me, that's his position. I know they brought in Nicario Harper. They've not been able to discuss him. I think Solo Turner is an interesting guy, but Xavier Scott kind of feels like that guy. It's been pretty telling how high they've been on him, and especially in these last four games that he's started or gotten that significant minutes. But I'm really fascinated with him. Honorable mention to, I want to say also James Cruz, but I think that depends on what happens in front of him. But
that was going to be my guy.
Oh, go for it. Go. What a transition.
That was going to be my guy because I think
the handoff.
I think a linebacker has to step up. I think they get better there. I think Kanan Odoluga is going to play a lot more. Is Dylan Roziak that guy? Is James Kurtz that guy? But James Kurtz, I think, needs another offseason of adding strength. But if he can add that, I think he's got the length and the athleticism they want. He's not the tallest guy, but he's got really long arms. I just think they need more of a playmaker there, man. You know, I thought the linebacker play wasn't all that great today. So I think they need to step up at that position. The other offensive guy I would throw in, and sorry, going honorable mention, but Henry Boyer, blocking tight end. I know they added Ark in the transfer from Colorado State, but they might need another guy in there. And I think Boyer can step up as a blocker.
Yeah, Boyer had a really good senior year. You know, obviously he didn't get a whole lot of tick this year, but he's already built sturdy. So, I mean, he's a big guy. I think for him, it's just a matter of kind of working out some technique things, working on his route running. But he's a good one. I think he'll sooner than later factor into the game plan. So my defensive guy, and some of this is going to depend on what he does in the weight room, but you were talking about needing to get more from the outside linebacker position. And a guy who I'm really intrigued by this spring is Jared Beatty. The guy is just an athletic freak. So I'm picking the all freaks team. But I think Jared Beatty can have a really good, if he can put that extra mass on, you know, either as the next Seth Coleman or opposite Seth Coleman. I think he's probably playing behind Seth Coleman just from a positional standpoint, just based on his build. But he's a guy that, you know, he's got all the tools there athletically to be great. And once he adds that strength, I think between that and his natural quickness, he'll be really good.
Yeah, I do want to clarify something. I think Joey's looking for more deeper on the roster than like Tyler Strain. No, I'm talking about like the people that are commenting. Like some people are saying Matthew Bailey, Tyler Strain. Those guys might start. Like I think we're expecting those guys to take a step forward. Do you have an offensive guy, Ryan?
Ooh. Part of me wants to say an offensive lineman because I think somebody's gonna need to step up. But I honestly think there might be a lot of buzz about Avery Jones. And I hate to cherry pick a starter, but he's new to the program. He's filling in for Alex Pilstrom. And by all accounts, he's a pretty good player. So how he assimilates into this line, if he's able to you know, mesh in with these guys well and fill that gap, I think he could be a guy that really sets the tone up front. Because you saw today, like they kind of struggled to run the football. And it's not all on the running backs. There's a part of that that's on the offensive line too. And as much as they like to try and run it in the interior when they can with those bigger backs, I think they between the guards and I thought Isaiah Adams had a solid game, but between the guards and the center, they just really didn't open those running lanes. So if Avery Jones can step in and hit the ground running, I think he could be a guy that bursts on the scene pretty quick.
Yeah. AJ on our chat said Hunter Whitenack. I would put Josh Geske in there. There's some buzz about him. I don't think they want to start him next year, but I do think they got to have more depth on the offensive line, and you hope some of those young guys can step up. Joey, do you have any other points you want to bring up?
No, offensively, I would take one of the will-be redshirt freshman running backs. We've spent so much time talking about that. Aiden Loffrey was a guy we thought this year could make an impact, and I don't think we were unfounded in that thought. Injuries slowed that down. If he can stay healthy – I'm fascinated by his speed, which I think they could use in what looks to be this running back rotation unless they go get some help. So I'll take him. Honorable mention, Sean Miller.
Mm. All right. Any last thoughts, boys, before we get out of here and Joey and I start our long trek towards Champaign, Illinois?
No, I just I'm now mad at myself because I should have picked Sean Miller. I've watched him since he was in high school, went to IMG twice to see him. And, he totally slipped my mind, but that's a guy. If he stays healthy and comes back, he's skilled. He's real skilled.
Joey, I got one parting thought. Thanks to John in the hospitality room, man, at the Hyatt House. John and his wife were just beautiful people. Been there for 37 years doing this in the hospitality room. Free food, which was fantastic, free food. But the company was great. They stood with us their New Year's Eve. We were lame and stayed indoors and just watched football games and spent time with John and his wife and everybody there. So shout out to them. That made it a great trip.
Well, that was fun. Shout out to John. Quite the heavy pour, Mr. John. We appreciated that. His first couple of days, it was just the Illinois, couple of us from the Illinois beat hanging out. We did spend New Year's Eve with our new friend John and his delightful wife. That was fun. Jeremy did ask if I'd be his New Year's kiss. I politely declined, and then we got Jeremy up to sleep. It was time for him to call it a day.
Put him to bed.
Who was ready to go to bed at 8 p.m. last night, Mr.
I've been ready to go to bed at 8 p.m. since the time we got here. I am too old for East Coast time.
Welcome. Good. He's 30s. All right, Ryan, thanks, man. Great to see you on this trip. Joey, fantastic stuff. Hope everyone loved our coverage. Try to cover this team and this program as well as possible. We got so much coming up with obviously some big decisions coming up, a big recruitment with Malik Elzey wrapping up, and more in the transfer portal. But thank you everybody for following along with us during the bowl trip. And thank you to everybody we met. Like we met so many people during this trip, especially at that bowl bash, Joey, like so many people just kind, supportive of what we do. And met so many subscribers, even some guys on the board that introduced themselves by their board names. I'm like, well, what's your name? Like your real name. But we appreciate that support as always. It was cool meeting them, Joey.
Met two Pekin guys. Stand up to the Pekin guys. One of, I won't say his name, but he's like, hey, it showed me all the podcasts. So shout out to Pekin for traveling well.
Absolutely. So thank you to everybody. Thank you for following this podcast. Give us a follow, rating, review, wherever you get us. Check us out on YouTube. Hit the like button. Hit the subscribe button. And, of course, check us out at IlinaEnquirer.com. Still got a 50% off annual VIP deal. So check it out there. More content coming from Florida, Alabama, wherever we get to tonight, and when we get back to Illinois. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the podcast, and we'll talk to you next time right here on the Illini Enquirer podcast.
Bye, everybody.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.